We got our monthly shout outs. A lot of people I want to thank for the things they've done this month. So first, Christine Smith of We Energies for conducting energy theft training for the Area 6 chapter of the Wisconsin State Fire Inspectors Association at the Wabaca Fire Department. So Chris gave us a lot of great tips on what to look for people who are stealing energy. And I was actually shocked at how prevalent energy theft actually is.
Really?
It's amazing to me what people will do and the dangerous things people will do trying to steal energy. So trying to bypass the meters, stealing, tapping in from a neighbor's house, running extension cords from someone's house to their house, powering their entire house with a small extension cord. It's dangerous. People do not do that. The amount of danger you put not only yourselves in, but if the house starts on fire and the danger you put the firefighters in, just pay your energy bills. Avoid the other things that you don't need. Stay away from anything that's a want. Get rid of the wants. Pay your energy bills. You need energy. You don't. It's not.
There you go.
Yeah. Prioritize your stuff. Second person I want to thank, Jenny Nielsen of Ascension Columbia St. Mary's Burn Center. She conducted burn injury and prevention training to the Area 1 chapter of the Wisconsin State Fire Inspectors Association at JF Ahern yesterday in Milwaukee. For those of you who have been listening to the show, my other job is the IFF Foundation Burn Fund. I'm a district coordinator for Wisconsin, Minnesota, North and South Dakota. So I just got back this weekend from the World Burn Congress. The World Burn Congress is part of the Phoenix Society. So the Phoenix Society is an organization that helps burn survivors. And if you ever get a chance, if there's something that if there's an organization you're looking to help, the Phoenix Society is a great organization. So it's www.phoenix-society.org. They also have a Facebook page, other social media. It's an advocacy and support group for burn survivors founded in 1977. They've got a number of great programs. So they've got SOAR, S-O-A-R, that's Survivors Offering Assistance in Recovery. That's helping burn firefighters and their families. The You Belong, that's a four-day event for kids and teens, young adults and families. Donations are always accepted. Sponsoring a burn survivor to attend the World Burn Congress is always helpful because there's 40,000 people every year treated for their burn injuries in the U.S., but only about 1,000 burn survivors get to attend the World Burn Congress. It's expensive. It's like this year it was in Grand Rapids, which is the headquarters of the Phoenix Society. Next year it's going to be in Anaheim. Great thing. So if you get to go to phoenix-society.org, they're always accepting donations and they're always looking for volunteers. As part of my job as the IFF Foundation Burn Fund Coordinator, I always want to thank my boss, Tom Flam, retired Chicago Fire Lieutenant, one of the founding members of the Chicago Firefighters Burn Fund. Great guy to work for. Everybody has some character flaws, so he is a Chicago Cubs fan, and he's a fan of Da Bears. So he was really upset that Aaron Rodgers, you know, sat out the first half and spotted the Bears 20 points before he even came in and then took him out. One person I really want to thank. So I have thanked a bunch of the burn coordinators and the other people who are kind of helping out with the burn fund. One person I've missed continually is Emily Washenko. She's our administrative assistant. She's kind of the unsung hero of the burn coordinators. She handles the coordination, the travel arrangements, staffing at the booths. She is far more than just Tom's photocopy girl. So Emily, you just want to let you know, we appreciate everything you do. You are a great big help for all of us. And James January of Chapel Hill, North Carolina. He's a friend of the Wisconsin Burn Camp. James was burned when he was in college, and he assists with various burn camps throughout the country. That's how I got to meet James. Good friend, been friend for about 16, 17 years. He also has a website, www.burnsurvivor.org. And he assists a lot of other burn survivors through University of North. I think it's University of North Carolina Burn
That's
Center.
That's one in Chapel Hill.
Yeah. So he's kind of a volunteer that kind of helps and assists with new burn survivors and helping them adjust into society after getting burned and adjusting to their burn injuries.
And again, to make it clear, this organization helps out firemen who've been burned, but also people of all walks of life or of all situations
right,
have been
yeah.
burned, right?
Yeah, the IFF Foundation is mostly for IFF Foundation Burn Fund is mostly for IFF firefighters and also assisting other burn firefighters with help with resources. The Phoenix Society helps everybody. So the Phoenix Society helps every burn survivor throughout the U.S. and their families as well. So the a lot of time, and I was talking to a number of family members while I was at the World Burn Congress and dealing with the burns as well as any family issues. So one woman I was talking to, her son was burned when he was 8. Well, he was at his dad's house and he was unsupervised. So a lot of the things I talk about throughout the show, whether it's swimming or burns or anything like that, the kids need to be supervised. So this woman, her son was at his dad's house and he was unsupervised cooking bacon and lifted up the pan and spilled bacon grease on himself. Oof. So yeah, he was, I think she said he was 8. He's now 18, involved in a lot of the things with the Phoenix Society. And, the Phoenix Society helps a lot of great, got a lot of things that help with the burn survivors themselves, their families, some financial assistance, a lot of emotional assistance. So again, www.phoenix-society.org to help all burn survivors across the U.S. And across the world. There was actually, I don't remember how many countries were represented. I sat at a table with a woman from Antigua, a lot of people from Canada, some people from Central and South America. So a lot of countries represented at the World Burn Congress this year.
All right.
All right. So now we go to the shortest segment of the show, the opening of the fan mail. The Fireman Kenny, do we have any fan mail?
None that I've seen. No.
Nothing came. Anything for Hannah at the library?
No, I didn't see anything for her either.
Well, I think she's more popular than I am actually on the show. So, all right. So now we get in the meat potatoes. Usually we have a couple of items that we talk about on the show. However, this one is going to only deal with Fire Prevention Week. So Fire Prevention Week is October 7th to the 13th. Just as a note, the Fire Prevention Week open house at the West Bend Fire Department is Saturday, October 6th. From 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. at Station 1, 325 North 8th Avenue in West Bend. So every year we have our open house and we'll have a lot of displays we'll have some booths set up. So we have a couple of our partners that are helping us this year, West Bend Mutual, PLM, Frederick St. Joseph's Hospital will also have a booth set up. And we're going to have from the National Fire Sprinkler Association, Sprinkler Fitters, I think it's Local 183, we'll have the sprinkler booth set up. So we'll have them on site to kind of show people how sprinklers work and dispel any myths of sprinkler systems.
All right.
So a little history of Fire Prevention Week. The National Fire Protection Association, the NFPA, of which I am a member, again, another great organization if you're looking for a membership, has sponsored the public observance of Fire Prevention Week since 1922. And then in 1925, President Calvin Coolidge proclaimed Fire Prevention Week a national observance, making it the longest running public health observance in our country. Fire Prevention Week is observed each year during the week of October 9th in commemoration of the Great Chicago Fire, which began on October 8th, 1871. The Great Chicago Fire killed more than 250 people, left 10,000 people homeless, destroyed 17,400 structures, and burned more than 2,000 acres of land. All right, so legend has it, so this is the start of the Great Chicago Fire. Legend has it that a cow kicked over a lantern at the O'Leary Farm at 137 Tacova Street on Chicago's southwest side. So the cow was in the barn, kicks over the lantern, and as I tell the kids when I'm at the schools, cow kicks over the lantern starts the hay on fire, the hay starts the barn on fire, the barn starts the O'Leary's house on fire, the O'Leary's house started other houses on fire, spread through the entire city, and burned down a good portion of the city of Chicago. On a side note, that farm where the O'Leary farm was is now the current location of the Chicago Fire Academy. I got the chance to visit the Chicago Fire Academy when I was at the American Burn Association meeting in Chicago this spring. And so even though the legend has it that the cow started the fire, there were also reported meteor sightings that evening throughout the Midwest. which could have started several fires in the areas.
Including
the Great Peshtigo Fire. So it was the same day as the Great Chicago Fire, so it's a little bit buried in history. So really only Wisconsin people are the only ones that are aware that even that the Great Peshtigo Fire existed. And because of the Great Chicago Fire affecting so much more, I mean, it was days. I mean, we didn't have the internet back then. May not even had a lot of telegraph and stuff back then. So it took days and weeks once to get the news out about the Great Peshtigo Fire. So Holland and Manistee, Michigan also had fires, as well as parts of the Door County Peninsula. The death toll from the Great Peshtigo Fire. So remember, only 250 people died in Chicago. 100,000 people were homeless. But in the Great Peshtigo Fire, the death toll was estimated to be about 1,500 people, but it could be as high as 2,500. It burned almost 1,900 square miles of forest. So that was an area about 50% larger than Rhode Island. And you can visit the Peshtigo Fire Museum in Peshtigo. I've never been up there. I've been past it, but it was closed when I went by. That is actually on my bucket list. I'll stop by.
Oh, there you go.
And see. So we have got a lot of fire prevention facts from the National Fire Protection Association. So home fires. U.S. fire departments respond to an average of one home fire every 86 seconds. Between 2011 and 2015, U.S. fire departments responded to an average of 358,500 home structure fires per year. These fires caused an estimated 12,300 civilian injuries, 2,510 civilian deaths, and $6.7 billion in direct damage. So this is only home fires. So home fires every year. I'm going to repeat these again. 12,300 civilian injuries, 2,510 civilian deaths, and $6.7 billion in direct damage. So a lot of things we do when we go to the schools every year, we try to teach ways to prevent fires in your home. On average, 7 people die per day in U.S. home fires. Cooking is the leading cause of home fires and home fire injuries. For decades, smoking has been the leading cause of home fire deaths. So even though smoking's coming down, but vaping is going up, and I've talked about the problems with e-cigarettes and the number of instances where e-cigarettes have caused a problem and caused fires. So that's included in the smoking. Heating equipment was involved in one in five home fire deaths.
So community conversation this morning with Captain Kenny Aslin from the West Bend Fire Department. Just before we go back to this, I just want to mention a number that kind of surprised me from the fire department's monthly report that just came out. Was that last week?
Yep.
Just another increase in the number of calls for fire calls and emergency medical calls that the department is responding to this year.
Yeah, West Bend's a growing megalopolis, so we're ever expanding. There's a lot of construction going on now that the recession's in an upswing. We didn't have a lot of building going on for years, and now we've got a lot of apartment buildings, mixed-use buildings, and the more people we have coming to West Bend, and West Bend's a great area to live, so if you want to live here, you know, come on up. But when you have more people, you have more calls for service, and one of the things that happens is we've got a lot of retirees that are moving up here. And in today's society, you have a lack of a support system, and a lot of retirees are moving up here because they're closer to their kids, but their kids don't live in West Bend. They're living Allenton, Jackson, Keewaskum, and Newburgh, and or farther out, or they're moving up here because they're moving from Milwaukee. And so they might be away from their kids. A lot of people that we encounter, their kids are living in California, New York, Arizona, and there's no support system to have family take care of the retirees as they get older. So then the fire department kind of fills in that gap. So let's say one of the programs we do is the Lift Assist program. So people who are falling in their homes, they call 911. They don't need to go to the hospital. They're just suffering from some sort of weakness, or they have assisted walking devices, that sort of thing, and they kind of tumble over. They call 911, or they've got their alert bracelets or their alert pendants, and we get called over there, and we go pick them up, and we don't have to transport them. We sign them off. And they are able to go throughout their day or their evening or their night So that's one of the things that's caused an increase in the calls, and as well as all the other stuff that happens in the world on a daily basis. And then you get more people, it just happens more times. So we end up with that call volume that, we had back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back calls the other day. I ended up on a call. The deputy chief ended up on an ambulance call. So 5 ambulance calls within a time span of about a half hour. And so we ended up, we have 4 ambulances. The 4th one's a reserve. So I ended up hopping on one of the reserve ambulances. And then one of the ambulances was lucky to clear. The first ambulance out was lucky to have transported and cleared when the last call came in. So they were able to take that last call. A little bit of a delay. Luckily, it was nothing life-threatening. But the city is expanding, and sometimes you have resources that might get tapped, and we need we have a lot of people that need our assistance. So yeah, the call volume keeps going up, and doing our best to make sure we're able to answer those calls within a reasonable amount of time.
And it seems like, as I sit home and listen to the scanner, that I'm hearing a lot more where the other groups of EMTs or firefighters are getting called in. And they say, because we've already got 3 ambulances out.
Right, right. So all the full-time firefighters, we have pagers that we carry on our off days. And we still have 4 part-time firefighters. So we're in groups. And then so when I'm at home, I there's lots of times I get paged in. I come in over 100 times. Probably this year it'll be about 150 times a year that I come in on my off days for fire and or ambulance calls because of staffing. And so 150 times a year, I'll come in. Out of that 150 times, I'm most of the time I'm staffing the station, but there's lots of times where I won't even be in the station yet and another call will come in. So I have to try to get through the light at 7th and Wash and get into the station, staff an ambulance and go on a call, or end up on a fire call, hopping on the engine and going that way.
And that's because you don't want to leave, and you can't leave the station unattended, right?
Right. Right. We have a responsibility to respond to these calls within a short period of time. So there is an NFPA standard on turnout time. So there's a standard on how long the call takes. So the dispatcher gets the call, and there's a standard on how quickly that call should get turned around. Once the call is paged out, there's a standard on how quickly we need to get out the door. That's usually under 90 seconds. And then there's a standard for the travel distance and how long it should take us to get on scene. And even though not everything we respond to is a life-threatening emergency, a good majority of those calls are. Or, again, I keep talking about productivity and how long is somebody down on the ground and it's affecting their productivity, that we can get them back up. And the longer you're on the ground, you run the risk of, sores on your body. You run the risk of someone has to go to the bathroom if they end up soiling themselves. Then you run the risk of infection.
Sure.
So the sooner we get there, the better off it is for getting society back into a productive mode and getting things done, getting people to work, keeping, like, let's say if a family member happens to come there and they can't lift them up, well, that family member has to get to work and get all their other things done. So we kind of fill that gap. And again, doing it within a reasonable amount of time and having that expectation of doing it quickly, kind of gets everything back in order.
Right. And then, I just want to make sure you can't leave the station empty, right? You've got to have at least one person back at the station.
Right. Yeah. Because, volunteer fire departments, it takes about 5 minutes to get somebody in, to meet our standards. Yeah. We really have to have people in the stations. So sometimes our station's empty. So like, let's say, minimum staffing days when we only have 3 people at a station, if an engine or an ambulance is out, the station's empty. There's 2 other stations to cover the load. But yeah, there's lots of times where all 3 stations, where the full-time on-duty crews are out on calls, and then we have to get people in so that way the next call can be covered. Because we have a lot of real estate in the city that needs to be protected, if they're in the event, sure, of a fire. Luckily, we do have a lot of mutual aid partners. But again, our mutual aid partners are coming from farther away. So if we're requesting assistance from the Allenton Fire Department, the Jackson Fire Department, Newburgh Fire Department, or Keewaskum Fire Department, they're still 6 miles in any direction
right.
that we're going to get help from them, and it's going to take a while to get there. So again, it's all about productivity and keeping, if people are in the station and a fire should start, we're going to try to keep that fire from getting large. So smaller fires go out quicker than bigger fires. And, which leads us into our next section, into the home fire sprinkler systems. So, again, I'm a big advocate of home fire sprinkler systems. Any fire sprinkler system, whether it's a one or two family residential, multifamily residential, industrial, or commercial building. One of the statistics that I saw that I actually pulled off the NFPA site, but I saw this when I was at the World Burn Congress. Fire sprinklers reduce the risk of dying in a home by 80%. So death rates without a sprinkler system are 7.5 people per 1,000 home fires. With a sprinkler system, those death rates fall to only 1.4 people per 1,000 home fires. So sprinkler systems, again, are proven to save lives. I just talked about earlier about how small fires go out quicker than big fires. The sprinkler system starts working long before the fire department even gets there. So we big advocates of having residential sprinkler systems, especially in apartment buildings. And I talked a couple months ago about how the Wisconsin Act 21 had changed the fact that we can no longer expect to have a sprinkler system in a building under the International Building Code. Goes back to state statute 101.144M, which is an older statute dealing with the older building construction types and dealing with, it's kind of vague in certain areas. So we want to be an advocate of sprinkler systems, and hopefully all my listeners out there are helping promote sprinkler systems. And if you see it on the West Bend Fire Department Facebook page, do me a favor and share it. Share it on your page and excuse me, just help promote fire sprinkler systems in residences.
Because the law does not mandate them at this point in most circumstances. Right.
So in apartment buildings, less than 20 units. So it used to be by square footage. And again, there's a lot of trade-offs. So if in the International Building Code, which the state and their Department of Safety and Professional Services had adopted, there's trade-offs. So you can have a with a sprinkler system, you can have a longer exit distance. And those exit distances now, because it's based on some square footage and based on occupancy. So buildings of 20 units or less don't need sprinkler systems now by the way the state statute reads. And there's a lot of builders who are putting up buildings without sprinkler systems that would have required them in the past that are now going to cause, it's not, it's a matter of when a fire starts in one of those buildings, because as you build more buildings, your risk of fire starts. So it's only a matter of time before one of these buildings that would have required a sprinkler system in the past that do not have a sprinkler system in them now. So it might not happen 1 year, 5 years, 7 years down the road, but it may be 15 or 20 years down the road that you statistically have a chance that these buildings would start a fire. And these buildings could then end up burning down because they don't have a sprinkler system. They're bigger. And I just talked about how with the fire department being, end up having more calls and stressed for resources, there may be some time where we don't have enough resources on scene to keep that small fire from getting bigger. And it's going to end up costing replacement costs. And again, talking about productivity, people who have their apartment building burned down, they've got to replace all of their belongings. And even if they have renter's insurance, because a large majority of the renters out there do not have renter's insurance to replace their belongings. And so you're now looking to replace your belongings. You're looking for a place to live. You need some place to stay temporarily. And that affects the productivity in society because that's going to affect your work and it's going to affect your family life. So we try to advocate sprinkler systems in any residential building. People are concerned about water damage with sprinklers. And a lot of times it's in the news articles about how much water damage happened. But as my good friend John Cohn, who is the Greenfield Fire Department fire chief, he's fond of saying, nobody cares about the water damage in a total fire loss. So we want to stay away from the idea that a sprinkler system that put out a fire caused $10,000 in water damage, but it probably saved $50,000 in fire damage.
Right.
And if the building burns down, no one cares about how much water damage was there when the fire department showed up. The building was already half down, and we created a swimming pool out of the foundation because we dumped 100,000 gallons of water.
Sure.
Leading on to escape planning. So one of the things when we're at the schools every year for Fire Prevention Week, we talk about escape plans. According to an NFPA survey, only one in three American households has actually developed and practiced a home fire escape plan. One third of American households who made an estimate thought they would have at least 6 minutes before a fire in their home became threatening. The time available is often less, and only 8% said their first thought upon hearing a smoke alarm would be to get out. And one of the things we always advocate, have two ways out and practice escape plans when staying with friends or relatives, and teach the escape plan to friends and relatives when they're staying with you.
Right, because if something happens and you're in an unfamiliar surrounding.
Right, you, same thing, whether you're staying at a friend or relative or staying in a hotel, look and see where those exits are. Know where the windows are. Know how high up you are. So if you're in a second story window, do you have an area where you can jump out? Is there a ladder available to you if you're on a third story? So if you're in unfamiliar surroundings, hearing the smoke alarm, there might be a sense of panic. Again, we try to teach the kids, don't panic, stay calm, keep the doors, check the doors to see if they're hot, and know there's no two ways out of whatever room you're in.
And I guess the other part of this is if the fire alarm goes off, the smoke alarm goes off, your best assumption is that there is actually a fire, not that it's a malfunction.
Right. Always assume that every fire alarm is real, and because they're meant for your protection. And even though there are sometimes there's false alarms, always make the assumption that it's real and go through the checks that we teach you in grade school and kindergarten, first and second. Go up to the door, feel the door for heat. If the door's not hot, go ahead and open it up a little bit. So check for smoke. If there's smoke, make sure you're staying low to the ground and crawling so you're in the good air. And so make sure that you're just following all the things that the firefighters taught you when you were little.
All right.
And then we're going into smoke alarms. So smoke alarms provide an early warning of a fire, giving people additional time to escape. Working smoke alarms cut the risk of dying in a reported fire in half. So if you have a 50% chance more of survival because the smoke alarms have gone off. And again, catching fires early so that way they can get reported, you can get put out, then you can get a way out of the building so that you don't get injured or die in a fire. Three in every five home fire deaths result from fires in homes with no smoke alarms. That's about 38%, or no working smoke alarms. When smoke alarms fail to operate, it is usually because batteries are missing, disconnected, or dead. Dead batteries caused one quarter of the smoke alarm failures. Go ahead.
And we need to wrap up here, but I want to add one thing for people who can't afford fire alarms, smoke alarms. The department does have a program.
Right. We do have a program. So one in two family homes for those that are 55 and older, we get the smoke alarms for free. I'm still waiting on the Red Cross to drop off. We've had a great demand for smoke alarms, and we've installed a whole bunch of smoke alarms over the last year and a half. So we are going to be getting another batch of smoke alarms from the Red Cross. So you can call 262-335-5055. That's the Fire Prevention Office. So again, that number, 262-335-5055. For people who are 55 and older, in one and two family homes, we can come in and install battery operated smoke alarms for a short period of time. If you have hardwired interconnected smoke alarms, we still have money available from the State Farm grant, and I can go ahead and install smoke alarms in your home. Now, the problem with that is I can't rewire anything because only the homeowner or an electrician can rewire it. So I have to find either smoke alarms that have the same connector for the hardwired ones, or somebody else will have to come in and rewire it. So again, that number, 262-335-5055. 55 and older, 1 and 2 family homes, I can come in and install smoke detectors in your home.
And I know that firefighters have been known on occasion to change a battery or two.
We can do that. Yeah, we can do that for anybody. If you are unable to change your batteries, we can come in. I still have some batteries from West Bend Mutual. West Bend Mutual donated a bunch of boxes of batteries. And since we're coming up on, it'll be soon when we change our clocks, remember to change your batteries when you change your clocks.
All right. All right. Thank you very much. Once again, we didn't get through the whole list, but that's all right. We did. I think we passed along some good information to folks.
I think we're, because I think I've said it before, the average time for the other community conversations is 7 to 15, and mine often go 30. I think we went over 30, didn't we?
Yeah, we're at about 31.
Yeah. Pretty soon I'm going to be taking over the show. You're going to just have to have me sub for you once a week.
So there
can,
we go.
Yeah, because I can come up with, I only, so people out there who are listening, we've gone through 2 of my 3 pages of information. I could probably come up with about 15 pages per day of safety tips, and I can sub for Rick once a week when I'm in here.
So, and when you come back in October, we'll talk about fall safety. We'll talk about Halloween safety, right. And just to give people a kind of a preview of what's to come.
Yeah. So, trick or treat safety, Halloween safety. We'll talk about candles. So again, that's that time of the year where people have their candles and their pumpkins and jack-o'-lanterns. So we're going to be talking about that next month.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Kenny.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Rick.
Community conversation with Fireman Kenny, Captain Kenny Aslan from the West Bend Fire Department. Let's see, figure out where I'm going here. Let's go ahead we'll go ahead and do a song, and then I'll figure out more. 101.3 WIBD AM 1470.